Wednesday. I assume he's either on the 416 or the 401. He's off to Toronto. More coverage with the mothership TSN for the World Hockey Championships. It is our old friend, former Sens defenseman, and all those other things that was just mentioned, Mark Bathot, on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Meth, how you doing this morning? Where are you at right now on your journey?
Hi, hey guys. I'm about 29 kilometers away from Kingston. So I'm past Gananoque. This drive, by the way, I mean, I had to do it last week when I went up for the weekend coverage. Now I'm going back up for a little bit longer. It's going to be about a week. But it's just such a long, boring drive. I don't know what to do with myself. I tried listening to you guys as long as I could until finally the feed started to cut out there once I got to the 401. But great introduction. I miss that. I miss that long intro that you guys had for me. That was incredible.
One of the things in the intro is professional troll. I got to ask, when you're in Toronto now, do you like look over your shoulder or how does that work?
No, you know, what's funny. So I was there last weekend and I was there, of course, on the Saturday for game 7. Now I was sleeping, you know, at some point during the game because I had to get up at 3 a.m. to do the coverage coming in from Finland. But I was at the keg sitting at the bar and a bartender, like he kind of smiled and smirked at me when I came in and sat down, and I'm thinking, okay. And I'm surrounded by Toronto fans because, of course, I'm downtown, and there's Leaf fans wearing the jerseys in the restaurant. And the guy kind of leans into me. His name was Stefano, and he's an Ottawa native. And he leaned in me. He goes, I'm a big fan. I'm like, oh, really? I'm like, why are you whispering? And he kind of takes a look around. I'm like, ah, I understand now. But he was very nice. Shout out to Stefano from the keg in Toronto. But, yeah, it was wild. I got a couple looks, a couple people asking for pictures. It's funny, people are so aggressive online when it comes to Twitter and social media, but when you meet these people, even Toronto fans in person, everyone's nice, everyone's gracious with their time and polite. So I feel like that's more of a phone / tablet thing where you have that what's the word I'm looking for, a little bit, you're not as scared or fearful of the guy. You're going to be a lot more respectful.
You got that keyboard warrior buffer, I think is the phrase.
That's right.
Maybe you're
that's
looking
what
for.
I'm looking for, yeah, that's it.
Right there. It's funny how that works.
Yeah.
And just to let people know, so I reached out to Meth late yesterday afternoon, and this has been a common theme when it's a boring drive, and he immediately got back to me. I shoot him a text, ask him if he can use him tomorrow, and the immediate response was absolutely exclamation mark. And then pointing out, I'm going to be on a boring drive to Toronto. This is perfect. So
I love it. Anyway.
We're helping you. Okay. You've been dialed into the Stanley Cup playoffs. Were you able to watch much of last night with the start of round two?
I did. And
your thoughts on the playoffs in general so far?
Yeah, well, I watched, so I didn't catch the second game, and that was also by design and choice. I didn't want to be tired today for the drive, and I got a lot of work to do when I get there, but obviously watched the Tampa-Florida game. Unbelievable finish, if you will, maybe, but like I thought it was lacking a little juice early on, and I maybe that was expected. I'm not sure. I mean, I had it in my mind, at least going into that series, I thought it would be a bloodbath. I mean, I said that on the podcast. It was probably more for dramatic effect, but I expected a little bit more passion at the start, but whatever, I'll take it. I heard you guys earlier talking about Kucherov. What happened? Is this not a different player from that first round? I couldn't get over how good he was last night. And I know I'm stating the obvious, everyone's watching. But man, oh man, I mean, just like a switch went off and he decided, okay, I feel good now. I'm going to take control of this game. And that was, for me, the X factor was watching that game last night. Nikita Kucherov was the guy. I mean, he was just having his way with Florida, which is incredibly surprising to me because they're so deep, even on defense. I mean, very deep. And he made Ekblad look silly. And I that was one thing I wanted to talk about with you guys. Everyone's fawning over the move. If you're a Norris Trophy candidate or nominee, or you're in the conversation, obviously Ekblad's an elite defenseman. What are you doing lunging with your whole body toward that puck carrier? If you're Kucherov coming down, you see Kucherov coming down one-on-one on you. I've had to face him one-on-one lots too. Use your stick. Use your arm. Don't use your entire body and throw yourself out of position. I that was a head-scratcher for me. I've seen Erik Karlsson do that at times and he'd get burned. But Erik Karlsson is Erik Karlsson, and you know he'll wow you offensively with some insane move that he'll pull out of his rear end. in that game, and everybody will forget the moment that he was burned one-on-one, and naturally I was usually there too. But with Ekblad, I was just scratching my head wondering why he decided or elected to lunge forward like that and throw his whole body out of the play. Anyway, I felt like I had to get that off my chest. It really bothered me. I mean, a really good defenseman should know better.
Not to give him an out, like I'm not doing that here, but no, honestly, I'm curious to get your take on this because he's playing injured for sure with how he suffered the leg injury in the regular season and he's back now. So when you're playing not 100%, like, does it change the way you would typically react in some situations?
Well, yeah, and Creech, that almost reinforces my point. So if you're injured and you're not feeling good and you're a defenseman, and I've been in that position many times too, just receive the rush. Mm. Now I can tell, and I'm glad you brought that up too. You can tell he's kind of, there's something going on because he just looks a little slower. He looks like he's played in the NHL for 17 seasons, and he's kind of that wily vet that's just thinking through the game, right? Like he doesn't look like nearly as explosive as he can be. So yes, you are correct. He is dealing with an injury. But for me, I stand firm on my point. If you're not feeling great, particularly a lower body style injury, just back up, let him skate into you. Worst case scenario, he's got to shoot through you, right? And you know, that can be considered a dangerous shot too, but I'd rather that than be posterized on television and get burnt wide like that. I mean, that was insane.
So, I'm just watching it on a loop right now. It's so bad.
it's terrible. And that's, you don't do that. That's not how you defend. That's very typical for either a forward who's caught playing defense or a very offensive minded defenseman. That's usually the types that would pull that or that would attempt to make a play like that. Anyway, I don't want to talk for 20 minutes about Aaron Ekblad, but that play really bothered me, especially in the playoffs.
Well, basically, I know Bieksa said pretty much the same thing. You know, stick or body, not both.
Yeah, he did. Yep.
Use your stick. And no, you're right. Like I want to give credit to skill play, and that was a skill play by Kucherov. Okay. That's a great point, though. Ekblad could have played that better, or Math. What he could have done: use the stick, right, and you lunge a little bit, but then you're adept. You got the big hip check in your back pocket,
dude.
If he goes around. Hey, you can lean back.
That was always how I did it. Lloydy, all my hip checks, I would swipe with my stick first, and then that would prompt the offensive player to go one way or the other, and usually they're very tight. And when you have that kind of speed, like that Kucherov play, that was prime time for a hip check.
You were salivating watching that, weren't you? I would have had him.
I'm licking my chops. And the most recent one that I could think of, and I didn't flip him, but that was like Malkin, when I caught Malkin in Game 7. In 2017, he just randomly decided he was going to try to waltz by me. And I'm like, okay, here you go. And then I caught him on the left side. So it's not to say that I'm expecting these players to make a play like that, but you have to defend better. But in any case, like I said, we can move on from that topic. I do think, that was another thing I wanted to mention. What was going on with the crowd? Did you guys notice that at any time? I think I really caught wind of it in the second period. There was no one in the stands. Now, I don't know if everyone's in the concession area, but, I mean, it just felt dead in the building. Did you guys get that vibe?
I'm sorry, Creature. I'll jump in, I guess. I was expecting more energy, and I think part of it was, like, you remember the game one that they had. It was just, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Like, how many stretchers are they going to need, you know, by the end of the first period? So maybe that was part of it. We're thinking, all right, here we go. And you're right. It wasn't it didn't have that kind of venom to it. And you're right. And there wasn't that kind of energy from the crowd either.
Right.
So
anyway.
two really good teams. I'm not going to say it was disappointing. You know, we still saw some memorable things in that game.
Oh, totally.
Kucherov
totally
showed up. And,
yeah.
And maybe last point from me on this, and we'll move on to something else. That's kind of the scariest thing. I think top to bottom, especially without Braden Point in Tampa's lineup, Florida, you know, has more weapons. They seem to, you know, be a little bit deeper that way.
Oh, God,
not much, but a little bit, right?
Yeah.
But here now you're thinking, if Kucherov is Kucherov again, he's the best player on either team offensively. And all due respect to Huberdeau and Barkov, like pure offense, this guy, he's been there, done that, scoring title, like he's the guy. So if Kucherov is on top of his game, they've got the best offensive forward in the series.
Yep.
Victor Hedman's the best defenseman in the series, and Vasilevsky's the best goalie in the series.
Bingo.
So, like, You know, as deep as Florida is, and, you know, they could still win it here, that's concerning. That the fact that Kucherov played that well in game one, that gets your attention if you're Florida.
Oh,
it's like, uh-oh.
Well, and how mad are you if you've got a bracket? Like, I went 8-for-8 in that first round. I'm proud of that. And then I'm trying to give an honest assessment of what I believe will happen in the second round. That was assuming Kucherov was still a little banged up, right? And then, of course, points out, and even if he does come back at some point, you know, you got to think he's going to be banged up as well and a little injured, won't be 100%. So based off of that assessment alone, I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be Florida and probably in six. Now I'm starting to rethink it, but it's too late. The damage is done. The numbers are out there. So we'll have to wait and see. I still think Florida's going to wake up. I mean, there were some plays last night. I watched Barkov. How smooth is that player? Is he not just fun to watch? And he goes under the radar playing in Florida, right? And then all of a sudden, you're exposed to some of these guys that you don't otherwise watch a whole lot. I mean, I always knew Sasha Barkov was a great player. I had to play against him. He's huge. He's a big man. He's smooth. He can make great plays. He's a nice setup guy. He's got great hands. I think being able to see it on that stage, it just makes me happy. I like to know that other people are discovering who Barkov is now. You know what I mean? So it'll be a lot of fun to watch. I still think Florida's going to take the series, but you make a good point there, Lloydie. Kucherov is that X factor.
I got a question for you, like not specific to any series or I guess all of them, but what's it like this time of year with coaches that are good at making adjustments? Because like every game where everyone's overreacting one way, like someone blows out a team in game one, and it's like, oh, this is going to be a wash. And then like I think Colorado-Vegas last year, the Avs looked unreal through the first two games, and then Vegas adjusted and they took them away completely. So what's it like being a part of the group and seeing the staff and the video and everything that goes into making the adjustments and then doing it on the ice?
Yeah, that's a good question, because when I would play, I was so caught up in the moment and hyper-focused on my own game that, like, people will grill me about questions yesterday, and he's talking about some turning point in the Pittsburgh series, and he's talking about a specific player penalty, and I'm thinking, like, I don't remember that. I don't remember a lot from it. It was such a blur. You know, I was so caught up in my own game and making sure that I was on point that I kind of forgot about a lot of the stuff. But I think when you're looking at games, and I'll use this one as an example where, you know, you look at the Colorado game, for example. I mean, OT, but Colorado was steamrolling them, right? Well, maybe not steamrolling them, but they were much better throughout most of that game. But the X factor, again, Binnington, right? Like he was terrific. So if you're the coaching staff now, what are the adjustments? Well, you're going to make some adjustments. You're going to have a meeting with your forwards. You're going to talk about positioning. You're going to talk about trying to get to the front of the net a little more, creating a little more traffic, like all those buzzwords that you're so used to hearing about. But the only real adjustment that I think you can consider making are those role player ones, right? Like you reinsert a guy on your third or fourth line. Maybe there's a guy that's kind of hit a wall and he's not really contributing the way he should. Well, there might be a guy that you can pull in and drag him into that battle and throw him in there. But as far as systems go, you're always tweaking throughout games, right? Like you're always tweaking during intermissions. Coaches are coming in, they're getting on the whiteboard. Okay, you know, from here on out, you know, Binnington's doing a great job catching the rim coming down the left side. Let's start cross-corner dumping, or let's start rimming from the other side, or soft dumps. Like those are the types of adjustments that you'll see on the fly. But otherwise, it's pretty consistent with the regular season. At that point, by playoff time, you already know what you have to do. And it's just trying to impose your will against the other team's willpower, because you're playing against a good team. There's so much parity at this point in the second round. There's no magic answer or secret play that you can adjust to. It's just hoping that your players are rested, focused, and, you know, going to win that puck battle against their opponent. And that's it.
Speaking with Mark Mathot on the Stanley Cup playoffs, I want to get a thought from you on the Battle of Alberta, which begins tonight. It's Calgary, it's Edmonton, the first time in 31 years that they're meeting in the postseason. And I want to ask you from a player's perspective, in that I guess to kind of bring it home to something we can identify with, and you certainly can, you know, the hype around this isn't just another playoff series. You're always hyped up. It's the playoffs. Like, so you're jacked. You're ready to go here. But there's that added element that it's bigger than just I'm playing a team that I want to beat here. You went through it playing Ottawa against the Montreal Canadiens. What are the players doing in both Edmonton and Calgary thinking about, I got to block out the noise here because there's more noise than usual here, and you got to stay focused on the task at hand because that could be difficult, especially in the age of social media and you know so much noise is out there.
Yeah, and Lloydie, that's such a good point because I shouldn't say people don't realize. I'm sure people are well aware that it can be a huge distraction. And you just look at social media, you look at Twitter in general. When I was playing, I'm trying to think recent memory, recent playoffs, like Twitter was much more, prominent in 2017 than it was, you know, maybe in those late 2010 or early 2010 rounds that we were with Montreal. So it was easier to separate yourself from the media then. But yeah, the most recent run that we had in 2017, my trick for me at least, stay off Twitter. I would stay off Twitter. I think occasionally I would post something like after the round, just saying, you know, kind of a rally post for the fans, but I would not read a damn thing because it's just, it can mess with your mind, right? You're in such a groove, you've got your routine, and then what? You read one negative comment or you read one, some donkey from like maybe, I don't know, some random small town hiding out in his basement, not even really a Sens fan, and he can make a pretty nasty comment and you'd read that and if, you know, you're not necessarily the strongest mentally or whatever, you're a little self-conscious, that could play games with you and it can destroy your confidence. It can hang over your head, you know, for a week going into that series or whatever it may be. So, you know, separating yourself from social media, you know, staying within your bubble, having lots of meetings, just being around the rink, around the guys, that's healthy. Having a good support system around the house, your family, your friends, but at the same time, having them understand that, hey, listen, I'm going to be ghosting you guys for a couple of weeks here. You know, I can't be talking to a million people. You've got your family, your distant third cousin wants tickets to a game. Beat it. I don't want to deal with you. Talk to my parents. You know, like, I don't even know you, but you want tickets. Like, as if everyone assumes you can get tickets, right?
We're twice removed. Come on. I thought we were pals.
That's part of it. So, you know, and I'm kind of going off topic here. But, yeah, so with regards to this series in general, I'm so pumped for it. I mean, you think about the rivalry between the two over all these years. Now, finally, after 31 years, they're meeting together. I'm fired up. And I think it's going to go the distance. Like, I've got Calgary winning this 1-7, but a small part of me, I think, is actually cheering on Edmonton. I mean, how do you not get behind a player like McDavid after the performance he put on in that first round? I mean, it's hard to cheer against that. So I think the work is going to be cut out for Edmonton just because of Calgary's depth. They're established on defense. They've got some big guys. They're great between the pipes with Markstrom back there. It's going to be a really, really challenging series. But then I think Edmonton, on the other hand, they've got some reinforcements coming back in, right? Like Kane's healthy. He's coming back in. I think Dreisaitl's going to be okay. I think I read that somewhere. So this is what I want to see. I want to see both teams at full strength. I want to see the better team win. So I'm hoping it's Edmonton, but I've got Calgary winning in seven.
How cool has it been for you to watch Brady Tkachuk embrace his brother's run and just look like he's having an absolute party when he's at these games?
Yeah, I mean, and I didn't know how I felt about that. You know, like, I think my opinion on it might be a little more unpopular, and I feel like I need to preface this with I'm a huge Brady Tkachuk fan. Like, I'm one of his biggest fans. I love the way he plays the game. I don't know. You know, being in the crowd, supporting your brother, that's great. But, like, rocking the Calgary T-shirt, smashing beers for another team, you know, and meanwhile you're the captain of another NHL team, it made me a little uneasy. But I do like that he's, you know, supporting his brother. I've got a younger brother who also played in the OHL, and I was always right there behind him when he was playing in big games. So I can understand that. Would I rather see him in a box hiding out? Probably. But that might just be me, like, grumpy old man yelling at a cloud type situation. So we'll leave it at that. But like I said, I can appreciate the Tkachuk family. And I think this is another comment, or another thing we all have to understand. That's what you get when you draft and have a Tkachuk on your team. They're really tightly knit from Walt all the way down to Matthew and Brady. They're always really tight together. They all support each other. It's just how they are. So I think it's one of those situations where you take it where you can get it, and they're having fun right now.
Sorry, just a quick follow on this. Can this do anything for him in terms of like, I think this guy wants to win at all costs anyways, but
yeah.
can seeing this and being up close just drive him more to have that success here?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, anytime you're exposed to postseason play and you've got maybe a little skin in the game, and in this case his brother, and you're there and you're experiencing the atmosphere and the energy, it's addictive. And I think that was a question that was asked to Steven Stamkos in the last round, just talking about, you know, like, what's the motivation here? Like, why do you guys want to win so badly again? And the obvious answer is, well, you like to win. But Steven made a good comment. He was like, it's addictive. Like, getting there is addicting. We just want to do it again because we want to get that feeling, that high you get from winning the Stanley Cup. It's incredible. So I think this is good for Brady. He's going to get first-hand experience, but he'll be right there to witness it. And you're hoping that he'll carry that competitiveness and experience from seeing what he's seeing now into Ottawa next season, and maybe can kind of get in some of the other players' ears and explain to them what it's all about.
All right, last kind of train of thought for you to what you're going to be doing. You're on your way to Toronto right now to cover more of the Worlds for TSN. The report this morning, the very latest, Tim Stutz has got a strained knee, and he's going to be speaking with Pierre Dorion, who's there. He's already been speaking with Dominic Nicoletta, who is also the athletic therapist for Hockey Canada, DJ Smith. He's well-insulated there with people that know him very well. And on top, of course, he still wants to continue to play. But it sounds like the call is going to be made that he doesn't continue to play in this tournament. You have World Hockey Championship experiences. You have an experience having an injury. Didn't you flew over once, Matt, thought you were going to play, and then couldn't. It came right back, right?
Yeah, that was compounded because I was roommates with Alex Burrows, who snored like a chainsaw. So I had this bad back. I'm roommating with a guy that I genuinely hated playing against. And then to add that, add insult to injury, I couldn't sleep. So I was telling the story yesterday. I'm on the phone in like the middle of nowhere in Finland, and I'm in the bathroom talking to my agent, like at the time was Larry Kelly. And I'm calling Larry at 4 a.m. I'm like, Larry, get me out of here right now. I don't want to be here. And he's like trying to calm me down. But you guys know what it's like when you're lacking sleep. And like adding to that, I couldn't even bend over. I'm like getting through practice. I'm not getting paid for it. I'm thinking like, why am I here right now? And now, a lot of that was pressure. You know, people were pushing me to go over and play again. I'm not really sure why, but I was getting pressure from a lot of different people to go play. That would have been my third World Championships. And yeah, so enough about me. With Tim Stützle, it's very similar, right? You're injured now. You got a sprained knee. That ain't going to get better in 5 days. Like, I don't know what people are assuming or thinking, but like, you just sprain your knee. It's not magically going to get better within the week. And the tournament is only several weeks long. They absolutely need Tim Stützle in Germany right now on that team. They do. We all know how dynamic he is. He's probably their most dynamic forward. But if I'm Timmy and I'm evaluating things, and lucky for him, Dom Nicoletta is there. He is fantastic at what he does. So they're going to look at him. They're going to say, well, you know, it's a little bruised up. Doesn't look great, depending on the injury exactly. It might take 2 to 3 weeks to get back to normal. We suggest just take the time off. Like, your club team, the Ottawa Senators, are the ones that put food on the table for you. We pay your bills. Take this time off, recover. That way you can get somewhat of a normal summer of training. Because you got to remember, guys, these are key developmental strength-building months for him. You know, at that age that he's at now, you know, he's turning into a man. He's putting on all that strength. It's a lot easier for guys his age to put on a lot of strength in a short period of time during those off seasons. You can't risk re-injuring it or re-aggravating it or making it worse by gutting out a couple more games for Germany. They're not going to win the gold medal. Go home, see some doctors, get your rest, do the rehab, and get back into the gym. That would be my advice.
All right, we'll leave it there. Did we take you through Kingston? Are you on the other side of it?
You know what? I don't even know where I am right now. I've been so distracted that, no, I'm kidding. I, you know what? I think I am on the other side of it now, so we're good.
Okay.
Got a couple hours to go, and beautiful weather. All is good.
Do you have time for one quick one?
Yeah, I got 3 more hours.
I just wanted to ask about if you could share the story behind the Crosby sign stick.
Oh, yeah. Well, as everyone knows what happened with Sid, you know, blah, blah, blah. A lot of nonsense. And then, of course, fast forward to this season. So I'm driving to the arena, okay? And I was for coverage for TSN. I'm about to do some coverage. And on the way to the rink, I think I was going 132 on the 416. Okay, so not too fast. Good speed. You know, I typically drive much quicker than that. I'm driving much quicker than that right now on the 401. And so I get pulled over.
And you come from a family of law enforcement. This is great. All right,
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, my dad retired. My brother, current OPS, beauty. So I get pulled over right around Fallowfield on the 416 on the way to the game. And, you know, I think he knew who I was, and we were talking, and he didn't let me off by any means. That's not where the story's going. But I asked him, like, you're really going to pull me over for going 132? He goes, yeah, you know, we typically pull over after 130. I said, okay, well, I respect that. You know, so he mentions that his kid was a big Crosby fan, and we're playing Pittsburgh that night, the night that I'm doing the coverage on the game. So, you know, we're talking about Crosby a little bit and yada, yada, yada. So he mentioned something about an autograph from Crosby. And I said, okay, well, I'll see what I can do. You know what I mean? So, like, you know, I get his card. He still gives me a ticket. But that's fine. And then I leave.
And you're then, a nice guy.
So that's, it just, it got, you know, it planted the seed. I'm like, you know what? I may not get another opportunity at this. I'm going to get a Sidney Crosby signed hockey stick. So I message the trainers, the training staff, the Ottawa Senators, and I asked them to get the stick for me. And I asked, I think it was Brom, you know, one of the beauty equipment managers that plays there. And I asked him if he would get Crosby to just personalize it with something stupid, right? Like, hey, man, I hope the finger's okay, sign Sidney Crosby or something like that. Sid refused to do it. That's how nice of a guy he is. He felt awkward. He was like, no, I'm not writing that. I'll just write something normal and we'll go from there. I'm like, ah, okay. So anyway, long story short, I end up getting the stick. And then I thought, in light of, you know, the anniversary of the run 5 years ago, I thought I'd make a post last night about it and acknowledging it. So water under the bridge, Sid and I are good, and I've moved on.
All right. Okay. Well, you're moving on the Napanee next. Okay. Safe travels. Down the 401.
Thanks for having me, guys. Yeah.
Oh, thanks for joining us. It was always fun to talk to you, and have fun with the coverage on TSN the next few days.
Okay, fellas. Thank you.
There's Mark Bathod on the 401 on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. Back in a moment on In the Box on TSN 1200.